Support for WPR comes from Isthmus Partners, an independent asset management firm offering comprehensive financial planning and tailored investment solutions for clients nationwide. More at isthmuspartnersllc.com.
Support for WPR comes from the Dram Corporation, manufacturers of commercial tools, equipment, and systems for greenhouse and nursery professionals for over 80 years. More information is at dramm.com.
Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, August the 3rd. As we heard in state news, Governor Doyle is asking bridge inspectors in Wisconsin to report back to him about whether there are any bridges in the state that need immediate attention following the fatal bridge collapse in Minneapolis on Wednesday night. U.S. Transportation Secretary Mary Peters says there must be a top-to-bottom review of the nation's bridge inspection program and has alerted states to start inspecting all bridges similar to the one in Minnesota. We will talk about what kind of bridge that was and how it differs from other kinds of bridges, whether there are those types of bridges in Wisconsin, and what it means to be classified as structurally deficient. How safe are bridges, and could something like this happen in Wisconsin? We will examine the issue this hour, starting with a professor of civil engineering at UW-Madison. And after 7:30, we'll talk with a guest from the Wisconsin Transportation Development Association. And we will welcome your questions for both of our guests at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or you can send your question via email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. We will start with Michael Oliva, professor of civil engineering at UW-Madison. Good morning.
Good morning.
So tell us first, what kind of bridge was this bridge in Minneapolis, this I-35 bridge?
Joy, this is what we call a truss bridge. It's different from most of the bridges in the state, where most of our bridges are beam-type bridges. They have multiple steel or concrete beams that run across the span. But those type of bridges can only be used for short spans. So in a situation like in Minneapolis, where the span was almost 2,000 feet, we have to go to a different type of bridge system. So the truss is actually made up of a number of small steel components that are all connected together in sort of a triangular fashion to create a much longer span structure.
So this type of bridge has fewer beams holding it up, is that right?
It really doesn't rely so much on beams. It has mm-hmm. this big network of steel, and the network of steel is like a single structural system rather than multiple individual beams.
Did it have any beams?
It has floor beams, and the floor beams really are just there to hold up the deck of the bridge and transfer their load onto this truss.
Is this type of bridge... It seems like it's, I don't know, less safe if it doesn't have beams holding it up.
Well, you know, that's a really good question, and the design codes recently have changed to force designers to design these types of bridges for larger loads, because, as you know, without a number of beams like that, in a truss bridge, if one critical member gets damaged, the entire truss can collapse. Whereas in a beam bridge, if one beam gets damaged, like in the Hone Bridge in Milwaukee, it's likely that that bridge is going to stay up and we're just going to get a beam deflecting downward. So these bridges are considered more critical, and the codes now actually require designers to design these bridges for larger loads than we did in the past.
This bridge was, 1967, I believe it was.
Yes.
So it was about 40 years old. Is that, that doesn't seem that old for a bridge.
No, actually, you know, it's funny, as designers, we typically design bridges for a 50 to 70 year life, but we actually expect bridges to last for 70 to 80 years.
Yeah. Tell me what went through your mind when you saw that this bridge had collapsed in Minneapolis.
Well, I was just amazed. We've never seen a bridge of this size ever collapse here in the United States. So this, for me, to see this happen, was almost on the level of seeing the World Trade Center in New York come down. It was something that I just couldn't imagine happening.
Well, and that's, we heard a senator from Minnesota saying, you know, bridges are, you know, maybe they'll collapse if there's an earthquake or there's some sort of calamity like this, but bridges aren't supposed to fall down.
No, they aren't. You know, we as engineers, we do everything we can to try to make sure that bridges are designed with a big safety factor. But certainly we know that, with heavier and heavier traffic, more traffic, heavier trucks, that our bridges are being, demands are being made of them that we never expected when they were designed.
Yeah. So do we have this type of bridge in Wisconsin, this truss, I can't say that, truss?
Yes, there are truss bridges in Wisconsin. There are not a lot of them, but yes, there are. Typically, again, they tend to be used where we've got a very long span, so a wide river or situations like that where you have to go a long distance.
Yeah. We're talking about bridges and what happened in Minnesota and whether or not that could happen in Wisconsin. And we welcome your questions for our guest expert, a professor of civil engineering at UW-Madison, Michael Oliva. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. About 17 minutes past 7 o'clock right now on this Friday, August the 3rd. We are talking about the bridge collapse in Minneapolis and wondering why that might have happened and whether or not that could happen here in Wisconsin. Talking about bridge engineering and bridge safety in general with our guest, Michael Oliva, professor of civil engineering at UW-Madison, and we welcome your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Professor Oliva, we did get a call from Barb in Madison who wants to know where in Wisconsin are these truss bridges.
Well, Joy, there's a number of them. There's one truss bridge that's real obvious up in between Duluth and Wisconsin. The Blatnik Bridge, and that's a truss arch bridge. There are smaller truss bridges. There are a couple of them across the Wisconsin River, and there are a couple of others across the Mississippi River.
Yeah. So, again, maybe they are here, but they're a handful, a half dozen, yeah, or something like that.
Of bridges of this size, I would guess that there are probably only like three or four here in Wisconsin.
Yeah. So, what do you make of this call by the U.S. Transportation Secretary and others to say we've got to inspect these types of bridges immediately?
Well, obviously that's the first thing someone would say. We've got to look at these types of bridges. And after every bridge collapse, we say we have to look at these types of bridges. And, you know, the fact is that the bridges that are this age, 40 years old and older, we just need to look at those bridges, especially if they're bridges on interstate system or bridges that carry the heavy amount of traffic that this bridge carried. To say we have to look at them, you know, that's a sort of an easy solution. But this bridge was looked at back in, I believe it was 2000 or 2001. And actually, they did detect some cracking in the steel of this bridge, but it was deemed as not being serious yet. Even when you go out and do an inspection, sometimes it's difficult to really tell whether there's a problem. You can sort of imagine a steel bridge that's 40 years old. It's been painted a number of times during its life. You can have cracking developing in that steel, and because the paint covers it, you just really can't see it. So it's easy to say we're going to go out and inspect these bridges. I think it's much more difficult to go out and actually do it and make sure you find any of the defects that are in a bridge.
Well, wasn't it also back in, I thought it was 1990, that some original report said that this bridge in Minneapolis was structurally deficient? What does that mean?
This bridge was ranked as structurally deficient, and I think it was given a rating of 4 out of 10, if I'm correct. But we have to be very careful about assuming that means that the bridge is near collapse, because a bridge like this, just because the roadway, the concrete in the roadway has deteriorated, maybe the reinforcing bars in the roadway started rusting because of salt on the bridge, a deteriorated roadway will force the government to give this a deficient rating. It doesn't mean that the structure is anywhere near collapse. It just means that parts of the structure have deteriorated and the load carrying capacity of those individual parts may be low, but the entire bridge may not be near collapse at all. Yeah. So we've got a lot of bridges in the country and in all the states that are structurally deficient, but most of them are still in service and most of them are working well. In Wisconsin, drivers in Wisconsin can see these very often, particularly on the smaller country roads, when they see a posting saying, you know, this bridge has a 30-ton limit. Well, that's posted there because that bridge can't carry its original design load anymore, and large trucks shouldn't go over it. But most of those bridges don't carry much traffic, and it's just not economically efficient to go out and try to replace all of them.
Well, this bridge in Minneapolis did carry a lot of traffic.
It sure did, yes.
Yeah. So according to this story I'm looking at here, federal records show that more than 2,000 bridges in Wisconsin are structurally deficient or functionally obsolete, 15% of the state's bridges. Does that surprise you, or is that a lot?
When you hear it, it does sound like a lot, doesn't it? But you mentioned two different types. You mentioned structurally deficient and functionally obsolete. A bridge that's functionally obsolete might be one that was built 30 or 40 years ago, and the lane size was 10 feet wide instead of 12 feet wide. We design with 12-foot wide lanes now. So if it was designed with a 10-foot wide lane, it's functionally obsolete. It still operates fine. It can carry the loads. So that separation between functionally obsolete and structurally deficient is important to realize that there's quite a bit of difference between the two. A lot of the structurally deficient bridges, as I mentioned, are bridges on small roads that can no longer carry the milk truck that always was on it before. And these bridges need to be replaced, but we don't have a very high priority because they carry so little traffic. Bridge like the one in Minneapolis, I think in the future we're going to have to be more careful to make sure that when they reach that kind of rating, 50% deficiency, that we look at them very carefully and maybe we have to replace them earlier than we expected we needed to.
Yeah. Lots of callers who want to talk with you. David in Fond du Lac, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, good morning.
Morning.
Here in Fond du Lac, they just replaced one old wooden truss bridge over a railroad with a nice new modern four-lane concrete bridge. So we even have some one-lane bridges still in operation. So there's a lot of those functionally obsolete things still around. But question for you about bridge harmonics. As far as I heard a report that there was a jackhammer as they were tearing up the surface concrete and replacing some of the joints and everything from salt damage. Combination of that vibration with traffic over the bridge in some way may have caused the concrete or the metal to actually flow as it vibrated, similar to the ice roads that they make in Canada, that if the truck traffic or traffic goes too fast, it actually creates a swell and moves the ice and causes things to crack and fall through. Well, wonder anything like that.
Bridge harmonics. I never heard that before, but you did.
David, that's a really good observation. Obviously, you know what you're talking about. Mm. Yeah, certainly having a jackhammer on that bridge would cause vibrations that would not be normal vibrations. And as soon as I heard about the bridge collapse, I immediately connected the collapse probably with some of the construction procedure that was going on. The other thing that confounds me, though, David, is that two lanes on this bridge were closed because of the construction. And you would assume that with two lanes closed, a lot less traffic on the bridge, a lot less loading. So you wouldn't expect a collapse to occur with that, reduced loading on the bridge.
The only other caveat there is the fact that supposedly part of their reconstruction was in the joints, that they were reconstructing the joints, which they may have opened up sufficiently to allow more travel of some of those pieces. And I know that from driving about 200 miles a day for my work and traveling underneath a lot of these bridges, that the concrete sits on slide plates underneath the pillars, which is supposed to design it to travel for heat and cooling and expansion and contraction. But if it slides sufficiently, it's only got 4 to 6, about 6 inches or so, you know better than I, of travel. And maybe something of that. So it's just a wild guess, like everybody else right now.
Yeah,
Thank you.
David, that's another good guess. And again, I was talking with some of my associates yesterday, and we were aware of the fact that they were doing work on these joints. And one of us thought right away, well, what if they were doing something that actually locked a joint up? And when we have temperatures like yesterday, that bridge can actually grow 2, 3, 4 inches in length. And if those joints were locked up, it would put a lot of extra force and stress in those members.
I was wondering about the heat, whether that might have played a part in it. So it might have.
It's possible. You know, we're sort of taking long shot guesses.
And there was a train rumbling underneath at the time, too.
Yes, yes. A lot of things going on all at
once. So what are the investigators going to be doing to try to figure out exactly what happened?
Piecing together a failure like this is just a tremendous task, and I'm actually glad I'm not one of those people. Mm. But they're going to be going in, and they're going to be picking up all the pieces of this bridge, and I'm sure, number one, they're going to try to figure out what the construction was doing, whether some of the roadway was removed. A traveler in the morning said he drove across the bridge and that there was a big hole in the deck, and if some of the deck had been removed, that could have weakened the bridge. They're also going to look at all the locations where the steel members actually broke in half. And where a steel beam breaks in half, you can look at it afterwards, and based on the cracking pattern in that section, you can actually tell whether that section had been cracking slightly before this collapse occurred. It might have been cracking as much as 2 years ago. And you can actually tell that by looking at the crack section. So they're going to be looking at each one of those pieces to try to detect little clues like that to the failure.
Thanks a lot, David. Next we go to Paul in La Crosse. Hi, Paul. You're on the air.
Good morning. A couple of years ago, La Crosse added another bridge across the main channel. So we have a bridge that's 60 years old and a brand new bridge. I would say that the old bridge, you know, it's old design and things like this, but it was completely looked at. Do both of those bridges now have the same lifespan? And since the old bridge now has one-way traffic, will the vibration pattern be sufficiently different to damage that bridge even more?
Well, again, that's a really good question. I'm familiar with both those bridges. I've driven over them a number of times. And the older bridge that you're talking about, again, is a truss bridge. It's the type of bridge we're talking about. One of the interesting things when we start talking about harmonics or vibrations of these bridges is that vibration is very important in short-span bridges. But in a long-span bridge like this, the vibration is really relatively unimportant. The amount of load that this bridge carries due to its own weight, you know, when you get that long a bridge, it weighs a lot. So the weight of the bridge is one of the primary things that it has to carry. Usually the traffic on the bridge is smaller. The amount of weight from the traffic is smaller than the actual weight of the bridge itself. So in a bridge like that, a long span bridge, typically vibration is not as critical a problem. So I don't believe that having traffic just going in one direction should really have any effect on that bridge.
Thanks, Paul. Jennifer in Casanova, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. I was wondering if you are familiar with the San Mateo Bridge out in California?
Yes, I am. I lived in California for 10 years, so I'm pretty familiar with that one.
Yeah, we just have a minute. Do you just want to know if that...
What type of bridge is that, and is California more advanced in bridge design where they're going to step up and give advice to everybody?
California is still struggling with their bridge design as well. Mm. That's a different type of bridge. But, you know, that bridge has just been totally rebuilt to make it earthquake resistant. And I'd say California's ahead of most of the country in making bridges earthquake resistant.
Yeah, and we have less than a minute. John from Rice Lake wants to know if there are visible signs of weakness in a bridge.
Yes, John, there are. You know, when inspectors go out, they look very carefully at that entire bridge for either small cracks developing, or else they look for places in the bridge where the members, the beams, are bending in a direction that's not expected. So, yeah, they go out and also they look for cracking in concrete bridges. So there are definite indications that can be checked in these bridges.
Well, I hope you'll come back again as this investigation goes along to talk with us some more about this. Thanks very much for being here.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
It sounded like the world was collapsing.
The bridge just fell out. It was just 1 second it was there, and in the blink of an eye it was gone.
It just was this odd feeling of people, things in the air that aren't supposed to be in the air, and I look up and feel kind of a free fall, and then feel a smash and smash.
I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 7:36 on this Friday, August the 3rd, and we continue talking about the bridge collapse in Minnesota in this half hour with a guest from Wisconsin who can talk about the situation here in Wisconsin and our bridge safety needs in this state. Right now, workers are still looking for bodies in the Mississippi River this morning. At least four people now have been killed in that bridge collapse. More than 20 are still missing. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. As many as 50 cars plunged into the river along with the six-story structure. Do we have bridges like this in Wisconsin? Yes, we do, according to our last guest. And now there will be inspections of all of those bridges, truss bridges in Wisconsin, to see if there are any safety concerns with them. Federal records show that more than 2,000 bridges in Wisconsin are structurally deficient or functionally obsolete. That's about 15% of the state's bridges. And while the number may seem disconcerting, most states have a higher percentage of bridges in those categories. In Wisconsin, 1,335 bridges are rated structurally deficient. 792 are deemed functionally obsolete. We're going to talk about bridge safety and our bridge safety concerns in Wisconsin with our next guest, Craig Thompson, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Transportation Development Association, and we welcome your questions for him. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So we have some unsafe bridges maybe here in Wisconsin too?
Well, you know, I think you just laid out the numbers that have been deemed structurally deficient or functionally obsolete. And I think it was, I listened to the first half hour of the show, and I'm glad that you had an engineer on because I am not.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we do need to be very careful when a tragedy happens like this that we don't, that we stick with the facts and we don't overstate things. As your guest said in the previous half hour, just because a bridge is deemed structurally deficient doesn't mean that, you know, it's in danger of falling down. But I think the converse always has to be stated as well, though, is it doesn't necessarily mean it's safe either. And so I think when bridges fall into this category, what this is showing us this far, and we're going to have to see what actually happened there, what circumstances came together. But in some of these, especially in high-traffic areas, it may deem a more close look at the condition they're in.
Yeah. So what went through, I asked our guest in the last half hour, what went through your mind when you saw this disaster in Minnesota?
Well, it is almost inconceivable to see a structure of that size go down so completely in 4 seconds, I think, is what they said. And with that security camera, you're able to actually see it occur. It is almost unfathomable.
Yeah, and but did it make you wonder if we were doing what needs to be done here in Wisconsin?
Well, you know, we've been involved in conversations about other bridges in this state, and you know, one's not carrying nearly this level of traffic. But again, as your previous guest had talked about, there's bridges throughout the state that are being posted at 30 ton or at different amounts, and this has caused quite a controversy in Wisconsin because in northern Wisconsin, some areas, this is causing a tremendous hardship on the timber haulers and the timber industry, which is, our third largest industry in the state. And it's causing them to go significantly out of their way and is cutting into their margin significantly. And so there's been meetings at the Department of Transportation and with some of the county transportation officials about this. And I don't think the answer is that you simply look the other way and don't post. The answer is you're going to have to determine which one of these bridges are most important and fix them.
Yeah. We have lots of callers who are hanging on, but they have more, I guess, money-related questions than specific engineering questions. Mike in Milwaukee, hi, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you. That's exactly my point. I remember in Wisconsin, there was a bridge that was replaced. I just can't remember how long ago that was. It was in Muskego or McGuanago or something like that. And I think it was McGuanago. And that was in the early 90s. Our bridge in that went over the KK and Milwaukee Rivers when the I-beam cracked.
And the home bridge, yeah.
Right. And I remember There was a big, big controversy. I think it was during the Bush senior administration that they said we really need to address infrastructure in this country, and a frugal Congress that didn't want to spend tax money on something so important as infrastructure just let it go. And I wondered whatever happened to that. And so, in other words, this wasn't a surprise to me at all, because we've just been letting our infrastructure go. The repairs that needed to be done, really needed to be done, were ignored. And I think this is the problem. And I'm wondering if you can address kind of the history of this, what would you call the assessment of our infrastructure, and what was done and what wasn't done.
Yeah. Well, have we been ignoring our infrastructure needs, Craig Thompson?
I don't think there's really any question that we have been. And again, I don't want to necessarily equate what happened here in Minnesota to this directly, but as it comes out, you know, we'll find out what exactly happened there. But there's no doubt that we're underfunding our infrastructure. Every study, basically, at the national level and at the state level, has shown that we've fallen quite a bit behind where we need to be in terms of safety and in terms of keeping our economy moving. And this disinvestment is, the further you fall behind, the harder it is to catch up.
Is it, though, Craig Thompson? Help us understand the bureaucracy of this. Is this because this was an interstate highway, something federal funds should have been allocated to fix, or is this a state government responsibility to fix an interstate bridge like this?
Well, you know, there's federal funds involved through the federal allocation process, no doubt about it. But, you know, within those federal funds you get, the state does have a decent amount of discretion in determining where those federal dollars are spent and which projects are you know, at the front of the list and which are at the bottom of the list. And, you know, a bridge of that size obviously was going to be a major funding undertaking. You know, when we look at what's going on with the Marquette Interchange, we know that construction and reconstruction of items that size costs a lot of money. But when you think about prioritizing, just to give a sense of how many cars are on there, the Dan Ryan handles about 180,000 cars each day. This bridge would handle about 141,000.
Hmm.
So, again, you know, without knowing everything that happened and trying to wait to see what all went into this, but that when you look at that kind of traffic, and if there were these fatigue cracks and other things, it is something that you would think would tend to move you up on the priority list.
Thanks, Mike. Rick in East Troy is with us. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I guess I'd like to follow that comment with or expand on it a little bit. I see a pattern in this country, and I've been to many city council and county board meetings where we talk about priorities, as your guest was saying, but there always seems to be action after an accident. I remember when they put a bypass around Whitewater, there was several accidents, a couple of them fatal, because they put stop signs up instead of lights, and then after the accidents happened, then they put the lights up, or railroad crossings that didn't have gates, but then when there are several accidents, then they put the gates. It always seems like we're penny-wise and safety-foolish, if you want to change that comment.
Mm-hmm.
It always seems like after the fact, then we run around and the politicians try to make themselves sound important by saying, yes, we have to inspect this, when it should have been done ahead of time, but they didn't want to raise taxes and be a spending politician.
Now, let me get our guest to react to your comments, Rick, after our weather break, which is scheduled for right now. And we will take more calls and questions about bridge safety and transportation needs in Wisconsin. Craig Thompson, our guest, executive director of the Wisconsin Transportation Development Association. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, 13 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Friday, August the 3rd. Coming up after 8 o'clock, join in as we talk about the news of the week, state, national, international news on the week in review. We'll welcome in Ed Garvey and John Sharpless to talk with you from everything from bridge safety to the state budget to wiretapping, that and more coming up on the week in review. We are talking about bridges in Wisconsin following the collapse of the bridge in Minnesota on Wednesday. Governor Doyle is asking bridge inspectors in Wisconsin to report back to him about whether there are any bridges in the state that need immediate attention following the bridge collapse in Minneapolis on Wednesday night. U.S. Transportation Secretary Mary Peters says there must be a top-to-bottom review of all of the nation's bridge inspection program and has alerted states to start inspecting all bridges similar to the one in Minnesota. We welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest, Craig Thompson, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Transportation Development Association. And we just heard from Rick in East Troy before our weather break, Craig, who wanted, I guess, was making the comment that we react to these types of disasters rather than act proactively and maybe repair or replace these things before a disaster happens. You want to comment on that?
Well, I think his point is exactly right. And, you know, to a point, you can say that that's human nature and that happens over time, that we wait until something bad happens. But if you look at the last decade or two, I think we've gotten much worse in that regard. We're not keeping up on the things that we need to keep up on. The levees, that situation that happened in New Orleans, obviously, after that tragedy, caused people to look at that. And now with this, I'm sure it's going to cause increased scrutiny. But at the federal level, we have not changed what we're raising for transportation in terms of gas tax since 1993. So that's been 14 years. It's in with construction inflation that we're buying 30% less of what we were with that amount of money. In Wisconsin here, we recently got rid of the gas tax indexing, which did allow us to incrementally keep up on things and not have to politically wait 10 years because people didn't want to change it and then have to come with a big jump to go back and fix things that we should have been doing all along. So I think it's a good point. People have to realize that it costs money for bridges and for harbors and for rail and for all these issues. And it's vitally important to our safety and our economy. And I think we need to, we blame the politicians a lot, and they certainly deserve some of the blame, but we have to look at ourselves a little bit too and say that we have to be realistic about this.
Thanks to Rick. Peter in Spring Green is with us now. Hi, Peter.
Yeah, good morning. Just getting back to the funding and stuff of the roads, and if I'm not mistaken, didn't our last budget the governor took $400 million out of the transportation budget to repair the roads because of other needs? You know, Joy, I think this might be something you might want to call the governor's office and ask them. You know, I mean, that from what I read in the papers, that'd be a quarter of all the money that would be needed to repair the bridges in the state. You know, and I'd like to know, you know, at least ask the governor what the, you know, what the purpose of that is, and are we in danger of having that happen because, you know, we want to fund, you know, other things, and, yeah, you know, it's not a glamorous thing, and it's, I mean, it's really irritating. Everything I've read in the paper, everything I've read on the thing, nobody's asked that question of our governor. You know, he's asked for an overview of the bridge work and stuff, but this is a case where, you know, he took the money out, and now we've seen what happens when that does happen, and, you know, and I don't see any accountability here, you know, immediately to ask our politicians, well, you know, what we're doing.
Yeah,
you know?
Certainly we have asked the governor when he did that, and he did say that he thought that the educational needs of the state took priority over that $400 million in the transportation fund. Craig Thompson,
it's hard to believe that, you know, that's a bill that was passed, that money was supposed to go there, and he just decided to take it out of there. And, you know, how many people have to die before Doyle says, well, maybe we should fix the bridges? I think we should be brought back.
Again, I don't know if that's fine. But you want to react to that, Craig Thompson?
Well, when the governor did that, and that's something that's certainly taking money out of the segregated transportation fund and using it in the general fund is something that we did not believe was good public policy. It was replaced with bonding dollars, however, so it hurt the long-term viability of the fund without question. Short-term, the money was replaced with bonding dollars for bonding, which in this budget now there's a debate going on in the conference committee right now about whether we return all of those diversions the money that was spent outside of the transportation fund back to the transportation fund. And in the assembly version, they return all those diversions immediately in the first year of the upcoming biennium. And in the Senate version, they do return all of those in the second year. But I do think it's critically important when we talk about fessing up to the fact that we have to pay for our infrastructure, that people have the confidence when they pay a registration fee or they pay a gas tax or whatever it might be in the future, that it is going for those infrastructure needs.
So you're not saying, Craig Thompson, that because the governor transferred money out of the transportation fund into education needs, that that didn't mean no bridges weren't fixed in Wisconsin that should have been fixed?
You know, I don't think you could say that had that effect in the last year or two. If that sort of practice is very dangerous for what it means for the long-term viability of the fund. And when you start relying too much on bonding, you're going to end up paying more in debt service than you're paying on fixing bridges and other things. So it's certainly something that we believe was poor public policy and hopefully is going to be corrected this budget. But I don't know that you could say that, in the course of the last 2 years at all, if our bridges would have been fixed.
Yeah. The current state budget, the state of affairs with our budget is that we have one, the state Senate will fund some transportation needs through a tax on oil companies, and the other budget, the assembly budget, does not tax the oil companies. Do you favor one or the other?
Well, yeah, the assembly version, there's increases in the registration fee, both for regular mm-hmm. vehicles and then for heavy trucks. And they do also return, as I said, some of those diversions. It's about $165 million worth in the first year. It doesn't raise as much money as the Senate version that has the oil franchise fee mm-hmm. in it. What we've really stuck to is talking about what the level of need is. Mm-hmm. And, that's been highlighted by there was a bipartisan committee. It was made up equal number of Republicans and Democrats over the last fall and winter, called the Road to the Future Committee. And of those folks, and these are people that have to sit here and have the difficult task of voting to raise the money, but they came up to the conclusion that we are about $700 million short on an annual basis for where we need to be. And even if you take the larger amount that's in with the oil franchise fee, that gets us not even halfway there. So what we're talking about is that the need exists. They need to come to agreement between them on what the funding mechanism is. But we believe the level that the governor put in terms of dollar amounts is one that we need to get to at a minimum.
Bernie in Whitewater, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. I think that when it comes to where the transportation money goes, there are some money that goes into new projects. For example, that bypass around Whitewater, which wasn't really needed. And there's money that goes into maintaining existing infrastructure and roads, which is needed. So maybe they need to get rid of some of the pork for the road builders as far as the new roads go. And also to say, looking at this thing, I don't think taxes need to be raised, whether it's the gas tax or otherwise, to make sure that tragic accidents like just happened on that bridge don't happen to any of us. Basically, if you look at our federal government, they're spending money in the trillions on the war and the military, which is completely unproductive to us. If they put that money into infrastructure, none of this would have happened. And I have to reflect that, Ralph Nader, various public interest groups have been talking for decades about the fading American infrastructure. And I just have to think that when these politicians make their little photo ops at a tragic scene, people should be there furious at them for the way they've been spending federal money on military that doesn't do us a bit of good.
You want to weigh in on that, Craig Thompson?
Well, I think it is important that we maintain what we have as well. And actually, in this budget, something the governor proposed that has remained in both versions of the House is a significant increase in highway maintenance, a $66 million increase. And I think that's important as well. The amount of dollars that are being spent on the war is, of course, a topic for another program. But in terms of what's there for infrastructure, other than a safety need and an economic development need, it is really a security need as well. And I just think if you look at it, if it's a segregated account, we have not changed, the federal government has not changed that amount in the last 14 years. And I think if we're going to be realistic that we're going to remain competitive in this global economy, if we're going to keep our bridges and other areas safe, we can't keep doing it with the amount that we were spending in 1993.
And Brian in Green Bay, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I have pretty much a similar point. The last 2 years, at least, I've heard the Society of Civil Engineers come up with their annual report, and it's been on Wisconsin Public Radio, and we keep going downhill. But my second point is, you know, U.S. 51, I think it is, became Interstate 39, and now U.S. 41 is planned to become an interstate, and we have both Highway 10 and Highway 29 going east-west across the state. I think we're spending too much on new things and not enough on maintaining what we have. We've gotten to the point already we can't afford to maintain what we have. Let's not add even more and then watch it all fall apart.
We have just a minute to go. Craig Thompson.
Well, we certainly have to have priorities of maintaining what we have. But in terms of new, we have to look at what that brings in and what businesses are occurring along those routes. And many times we receive more back for the dollars we spend on some of those projects than what we spent on in the first place in terms of economic activity.
We'll leave it there. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, Joy.
Craig Thompson, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Transportation Development Association, talking with us about transportation needs for the state of Wisconsin in light of the bridge collapse in Minnesota on Wednesday. We also heard from a professor of civil engineering at UW-Madison in our first half hour of this program to talk about bridge safety in general and bridge safety in Wisconsin. Thanks to both of them for joining us. Thanks to Leo Duran for producing the hour and to Christina Taylor for on-air production. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network.